Welcome to Parenting Teens with Dr. Cam, the podcast dedicated to helping you tackle the challenges of parenting teenagers without the drama. I'm your host, Dr. Cam. Let's get on with the show. Did you know that OCD affects up to 3% of adolescents in the United States? That's roughly one in every 30 teens. While OCD can manifest in various ways, the constant worry and intrusive thoughts generates can be incredibly difficult for teenagers to navigate. And let's be honest, parents often worry they're not doing enough to help their teens overcome OCD. That's why I'm thrilled to have Natasha Daniels join us today. Natasha has been an anxiety and OCD therapist for over two decades. She combines both her clinical expertise and her lived experience raising her own three kids with anxiety and OCD. She is the creator of the website AT Parenting Survival, as well as the host of the show AT Parenting Survival Podcast and the YouTube channel Ask the Child Therapist. Natasha, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So let's start. What inspired you to specialize in anxiety and OCD?
You know, people always ask me that, and it's such a long story. The short version is I was supposed to work with adults, and then I kept getting interim like placements with children. So then I became a child therapist. And then over time, I really loved kids with anxiety and OCD because it was very solution-oriented. It was very task-oriented. Yeah. There was a lot of success. And so I just started to narrow my practice down.
So really it was the need.
It was. Well, and it was also like the effectiveness. Like I felt I was like the most effective with those kids and families because – maybe intuitively, I just got it because I'm an anxious person and I have my own anxiety disorder. I didn't have kids yet with anxiety and OCD. So it's people always wonder if I got into it because of my kids. And actually, it was the other way around.
Oh, that's interesting. So yeah. You had the expertise and then were blessed with kids and they happen to have that. And so you've been able to help them.
Yeah, ironically. I guess it's not too ironic because – mental health issues were rampant in my family. So that's really what drove me to be a therapist. But it was kind of ironic that's
that turned it around. Well, yeah. The fact that you're saying that there's such a huge success rate is very promising, right? To anybody listening that is worried about themselves or their kids with OCD, there are solutions. So let's dig into this a little bit. First of all, what are some of the most common signs or symptoms for teens with OCD? How do those typically show up?
It's a hard question because I think partly why OCD is so misunderstood and misdiagnosed is because it has so many different disguises. OCD shows up in so many different ways compared to other disorders. Other disorders kind of have a profile that you can kind of check off a little bit. It looks a little different for each person, but there's a general look. OCD is vastly different depending on what type of OCD theme is getting hooked in and how it's manifesting. And so the signs can be all over the place. So I was trying to think about that when I saw that you're going to ask me that. And it was like, well, it depends on their theme. But one of the general things is they might look distracted, right? Because they're in their own head. They're having intrusive thoughts. I mean, but that could be anything. So it's really hard. They might have some nonsensical behavior. And so hopefully you have a good editor. Like all of a sudden I've got something in my throat. So they might have some nonsensical behavior where they're doing things where they're getting stuck. And so they're doing something that doesn't make sense or they're repetitively doing something and they can't move forward. Might be one sign. Another one might be that they're asking you questions as a parent that seem very cyclical, like you can't get out of it. It's a loop and they're not satiated by your responses. And so it might be something like, you know, asking for reassurance on something or asking if they have moral OCD themes, they might say, you know, yesterday my friend said, go get a piece of gum and I went into her purse and what if I took something? You know, do you think that I would take something? Or, these are kind of moral questions, or it could be existential questions. So you can see how it could be like across the board on what those signs would be.
And so we've got kids that are going to ask these questions, right? And so when is it typical, whatever typical is, but typical questions and curiosity, when does it become a disorder where it becomes disruptive? Where does that line draw?
That's a great question, because I think that that's the differentiation is typically for the parent, you start to get frustrated and think, what is this? Because there's no movement. If they're doing some sort of behavior that they're getting stuck in, whether that is over wiping, over washing, going in and out of doors, tapping on things, wiping things down, opening things with their elbows, all sorts of stuff that it could be. When you rationalize that and you say, why are you doing that? And then they say, they give you an answer. Sometimes they might give you a rational answer like, well, I thought that, something was on the doorknob. So I thought I needed to not touch it. And then you rationalize it and you say, well, I saw you wash your hands before and, there could be no bird poop on the doorknob. There's no birds in the house. And that doesn't satisfy them. They're like, yeah, but what if? Yeah. Or they're doing it again and again. So the first sign would be you're trying to problem solve or rationalize their nonsensical behavior, or they might think it's actually sensical, if that's a word, and it's not moving the dial. The other one is when they're talking to you, because a lot of times OCD involves you in the OCD loop, and parents miss that. Mm-hmm. One of the signs, and these are subtle signs, so they're not really black and white, is the frustration that parents feel because they're like, we are stuck in a loop and we're moving nowhere. I've been sitting here talking to you for 2 hours and we're having the exact same conversation over and over because they want that certainty. Mm-hmm. So they're like, but what if this? But what if that? And they can't move on, or they might say, you need to say it this way, or no, you have to say it again. And so they want you to repeat it in a way that it feels just right or is satisfying the OCD. And so really one of the indicators is that frustration of being stuck. Mm.
Yeah. And I've talked to parents too who are in that loop with their kids and don't understand where it's coming from. And no matter what they do, there's no relief for the kid or for the parent, because the parent gets extremely frustrated. So I want to kind of go there. If we're experiencing this behavior, and I'm sure there's multiple levels of it. And one of the things we want to do as parents is, first of all, not feed into it so it becomes bigger, but also hopefully minimize it as much as possible until we can get the right help. So if we're noticing this behavior, let's start first. What are the three worst things that parents can do in that moment?
Well, we all mess up. So I'm going to say these things, but remember, I think that we all do this when we're first starting because we don't know that it is OCD and we don't know about OCD. And so almost every single parent will do these things. So there's my caveat. But I think the first one is that we rationalize it. Mm-hmm. And so once we know it's OCD and we learn about OCD, the first step is really not to continue to rationalize it. You know that you already washed your hands 5 times, or you know that going in and out of the door 3 times isn't going to keep me alive. You know that makes no sense.
Yeah.
The more we do that, the more we kind of shame our kids inadvertently. Mm-hmm. Because intellectually, most kids and teens understand that at that point, but they still can't help it.
Yeah.
I would say the second thing is a wait and see approach. I think waiting and seeing for OCD is it's a dangerous thing because it's kind of like being a little bit pregnant. When you have a little bit of OCD, to the point where it's impeding in their ability to function.
Yeah.
You want to get help right away because being proactive and getting that early intervention is so key. There's help at any time. You could be 40 and realize you have OCD and you can really make some strides. But there's nothing more beautiful than developing those seeds of skills at an early age so that it becomes part of them. And OCD could be incredibly debilitating. I think it's one of the most debilitating disorders out there. And so getting them those tools and skills early is so important. Sometimes parents wait because they don't want to pathologize their child, or they don't want to make a bigger deal of it, or they have other issues. So that would be the second one. And the third one, which takes time, is learning how to pull back your involvement in the OCD loop. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that overnight. You didn't get involved in it overnight. You probably were doing this for a long time before you realized. And you can't do it cold turkey. because that's not kind and it's not therapeutic, but learning your involvement and how you systematically pull back your involvement in the OCD ritual is really important too.
Right. So we want to avoid, and I wanted to say this way just because, you know, you're unsure what to do and what not, and what to do and what not to do. So I wanted to kind of be clear on here's some of the things to just our natural instincts that we want to do that aren't going to be helpful. So we're aware right. of it. So it's like trying to rationalize with them and saying this is not working because it's not a rational thing what they're doing. So right. being rational with it is not going to help. Feeding into the loop and continuously. So when you mean continuing into the loop, do you mean constantly answering their questions over and over again? What do you mean by, so let's talk about what we can do instead. If we can't rationalize with them and we can't feed into them and we need to get them help, what do parents do when they notice this behavior?
Yeah, a lot of it is foundational work. And so once you know that your child has OCD or you're thinking they have OCD, a lot of it is the stuff that we have to do of like soaking up information, learning about it, teaching them about it so that we're not just doing this to them. And they're wondering why all of a sudden are you not supporting me, or why all of a sudden are you not, you know, scratching that itch that I need scratched. And so once you have done that, I also think you can rationalize one time, you know, as a therapist, I always did some psychoeducation initially. Because they're still kids and teens. So they might have a question about something taboo or sexual or even how germs are spread. And so I, because especially when they're preteen or teen and young adult, well, probably adult, they get more taboo sexually intrusive thoughts. And so they have moral questions, existential questions. So I do feel like it's okay to have one conversation that's psychoeducational. You know, this is how this works, but then no more, because you're going to, OCD won't be satisfied with that. And I always say to the kids I've worked with, I know your OCD is not going to care about this, but I'm going to tell you how that works and why that doesn't make sense. And it's not going to matter to your OCD, but I want you to know what that's about, because we don't want to fill in, you know, we want to fill in that gap. But then we might have a conversation with our child and say, you know, I notice that you excessively say, I'm sorry. And you want me to say, it's okay. And if I say, okay, you say, no, you have to say, it's okay. And if I say, whatever, you're like, no, you have to say, it's okay.
Yeah.
And I'm realizing that's OCD. And, you know, so that's why you have to do your education. So you have to know like what part of your, what role you're playing. And then you might come up with a plan with or without your child, depending on their cooperation, and say, from now on, when you say, I'm sorry, and I know, and I recognize it's your OCD, what can I say differently? And if they're not willing to kind of cooperate and collaborate with you and say, you can say this instead, then you might have to say yourself, when you say, I'm sorry, from now on, I'm going to say, tell your OCD, I'm not talking to it. Or in my family, like my son had this issue actually with this particular compulsion, and we did collaborate. And he said, when I say, I'm sorry, and you know, it's OCD, just say, sorry, not accepted. That'll drive my OCD crazy.
Right.
And so I wouldn't have done that on my own. I wouldn't have done that to him because that seems cruel. But because he told me that that's okay to say, if he says, I'm sorry once, I'll say it's okay, because I never know, you know?
Right.
And sometimes he'll apologize for things that are like, you know, okay, you could apologize for that.
He needs to apologize for that, right?
Right. Yeah. And that's okay. You know, as a parent, when it's beyond that, because it becomes incessant and nonstop. Yeah. I'm sorry. And then I'll be like, I heard you, you know, but you don't want to complete that loop. But having a plan is really important. And if, whether you collaborate with your child, because a lot of kids aren't there yet, or you at least indicate to them from now on, this is how I'm going to handle it. And this is why, because I love you. And I realize now that I'm growing your OCD and I don't want to be part of that because I don't want to be part of growing your OCD.
Natasha, the big thing I keep hearing there is that we're separating the child from the OCD. And I love this. This is not about you have a problem. It's like, we're both fighting this OCD together that's kind of on your shoulder here. And we're going to address this as a different being so that the kids don't feel like this is their identity. It's something that they can conquer, right? Something that they don't have to always have with them because it's not a piece of them.
Yeah. And I think that is a shift in how we're talking about mental health in other arenas.
Yeah.
You know, where we are lovingly accept our neurodivergency or our differences. And I get that question a lot with OCD, because I feel like part of the disorder with OCD is to, for a lot of people, tell you that you're something you're not.
Yeah.
To have thoughts that don't align with your belief systems or thoughts that are not who you are. And that is at the crux for a lot of people with OCD is OCD is telling me I'm this, but I know I'm that. Yeah. And so to embrace it as part of you is counterintuitive. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't work with OCD. And it is a glitch in the basal ganglia. It is really a physiological condition. It's a neurological condition. And so to teach kids that early on really brings a lot of relief to say, it's a glitch. Let me explain the science to you so that you know these thoughts are not who you are. They're random thoughts that are getting stuck and we have to get them unstuck.
Yeah. So explain a little bit about the science behind it. What is triggering OCD in a lot of these kids?
Yeah, I wish research was a little bit more advanced because we're at the point where we definitely know what part of the brain, and I'm not a neuroscientist. There's my disclaimer there. But I do get fascinated by this because I'm always a how person.
Yeah.
Oh, let's just talk about the science. Why is this happening? It's such a bizarre disorder. And, you know, it's happening in the basal ganglia and the frontal orbital cortex. So that circuitry that goes back and forth. And it is interesting because the basal ganglia, you know, has the disorders like Parkinson's, Tourette's, movement disorders and habit disorders, you know, people getting stuck, they're not getting the message to move on. And so what causes that? That's the biggest question right now, but we know that it's actually happening in that circuitry. And there can be, I think, a lot of causes actually that are causing the same symptoms for people.
Hey parents, feeling overwhelmed? You don't have to do this alone. Join the Thriving Parent Academy, where community support is everything. Member Tracy said, "We all developed at an exponential rate together." And Carrie admitted, "I didn't think I needed this, but it's a life game changer." Don't wait. Join us at thrivingparent.org and use promo code THRIVE20 for 20% off your membership. Let's thrive together.
Is there any piece of it that is about a need for control, or is it completely just a misfiring?
That's such a good question, because there's so many things that people talk about with OCD that are scientifically not accurate. Mm-hmm. And the need for control, or that OCD is a byproduct of anxiety,
yeah,
drives me crazy, because it's not accurate. If you really get into the neuroscience and you really study OCD and you look at what's happening, the mechanisms of the brain. And I wish, you know, I took more biology in school, because some of those researchers, I mean, it's hard to get through, but you can get the gist of it. And really it's a glitch in this circuitry mm-hmm. of feeling incomplete or feeling this dread or feeling whatever is getting stuck in that circuitry and then not getting the message in your brain to turn it off or that it's mm-hmm. satisfied. You're not getting the off switch. And so you're feeling the dread and you're feeling the urge to do whatever OCD is telling you to do or avoid, but you're not getting the relief. You know, it's very brief and then you have to do it again because that off switch isn't happening. A lot of it does center around uncertainty, you know, mm-hmm. and so the need for certainty, but not always. You have just right OCD where it just doesn't feel just right and you don't know why. You have to keep washing or brushing or doing or saying or writing, whatever it is. Sometimes there's disgust OCD theme where things just overwhelm you and disgust you and you have to avoid them and you can't touch them and there's no core fear. But a lot of themes do revolve around uncertainty. And so I think that's why people think OCD is about control, but I really don't think that's at the crux of the disorder.
And it seems like there's a correlation, but not a causation. And if there is a causation, it almost sounds from what you're saying, OCD may trigger and cause anxiety, but it's not the other way around, which I think a lot of people believe.
Yes. And that's why I actually was really happy when they separated them out in the DSM.
Yeah.
Because they are two different disorders.
Very different things.
I mean, there's anxiety is a comorbid condition. So lot of people with OCD have an anxiety disorder as well. And OCD is very anxiety producing. You know, the amygdala does get overreactive because it's like, holy cow, what is going on in the brain? And so it wants its peace. And so a lot of people are incredibly anxious and overwhelmed, but they're also depressed. I mean, it causes a lot of emotions.
Well, I imagine too, if it feels uncontrollable, but you feel like you have to control it because it's bothering everyone else, that creates that own sense of anxiety and insecurity in yourself going, I can't control me and people are getting upset with me. So now I'm in this place of I don't know what to do. So we've got kids in this situation where, and I've seen everything from the hand washing to the hair picking and those type of behaviors too, and the questions and sense of questions, right? So when we see this, how do we support our kids without shaming them or misunderstanding them, but also without enabling them? What do we do?
Well, I just want to mention the hair picking. So the hair picking is more a BFRB, a body-focused repetitive behavior.
Okay.
And we actually would approach that totally separate because that's not a compulsion and it's not OCD. It's part of the OCD spectrum. But there is a, you know, there's Combi, there's a whole other like therapy that we would use to address that. But I think it's a good question to talk to your kids because there is a shame that comes with OCD for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like kids feel out of control. And that, you know, maybe that's where the control topic comes in. They feel out of control and they have to do what OCD says. And so there is this battle of control versus no control.
Right.
And parents, if they don't separate OCD from the child or the teen, it's easy to get frustrated with your teenager and just be like, stop doing that. Or why are you doing that? And that's hard because we're human as parents and we just want them to stop. Mm-hmm. So I think letting them know that they're not alone, letting you know as a parent you're not alone is really the first step because you're normalizing it. I know you think you're the only person that has to walk through the door five times to make sure I'm not going to die, but there are so many people out there who have OCD and have similar thoughts that you do.
Yeah.
So showing them YouTube videos or getting them to read books or getting them into a support group with other kids, if you can find that, that's a beautiful thing.
That's hard to find.
Very hard to find. But the normalization is really important first so that they know this isn't about you and I've got you is what I would say to my daughter. I'm like, I've got you. Like, we're going to do this together. And that's kind of why the personification of OCD and externalizing it is so powerful because at my house and in my practice, we always name it if they're willing. If they're not, that's okay. But we have like, you know, we have lots of names in my house and we'll personify it and be like, you know, Mr. O is bothering you, but we're not going to let him ruin this trip for you, or we're not going to let him ruin this party for you. And so it becomes more of a united front that we are doing this together. So it's not me against your OCD, which is kind of like you. It's me and you against Mr. O.
Exactly. And I think this helps us as parents have more patience because we're not frustrated with our kid. We're feeling like, oh my gosh, our kid's really struggling to fight this thing. And I actually even had a parent draw a picture of how she visualized it so that when she was starting to get impatient, she could visualize this other creature on their shoulder and be like, okay, I'm going to direct to that, not to my child, which completely changed the dynamic.
I love that. That's a great intervention.
Really, it was really helpful for her because it's a hard thing to process because you just get annoyed. It's like enough, and now it's starting to trigger me and I'm starting to go. So I think that's what's – and then the kids are feeding off of you being annoyed at them and that just becomes even more, right?
Yeah.
So now what is – and explain to us when kids go into treatment. Can you give us a little inside behind the curtain of how – they address these behaviors?
In therapy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the first step is really normalizing it. You know, I think you're going to normalize it. You're going to explain how OCD works because they need to know the mechanisms of it. You know, that when you do a compulsion, it's actually growing the neural pathways in your brain that will create more and more OCD thoughts. And so helping them understand that when you don't do the compulsion or you don't avoid, because avoidance can be a compulsion, or a mental compulsion. So explaining all that stuff to them. A lot of it's psychoeducation on what OCD is, how it works, how other people have it, and then exploring their themes. I always explain OCD as like, it's got lots of different flavors, but it's all like, you know, I always equate it to ice cream for some reason. I'm like, there's many, many flavors, but it's all ice cream. It all melts. It's all cold. It's all the same. So when you learn the foundation of how to approach OCD, it's plug and play.
I love
you know,
that.
You can, oh, I have a new theme, still plug and play. Because I think sometimes we as therapists don't mention that part and they think, well, I used to have symmetry OCD where I had to make things even, but now I have contamination OCD, which is totally different.
Right.
And so now what do I do? So I really want to make sure that kids know, plug and play. I'm going to teach you the framework, and it doesn't matter what the intrusive thought or feeling is, and then what the compulsion is, you're going to learn the framework of how to do it.
Yeah.
And then we jump into ERP, which is exposure response prevention, which is a type of cognitive behavioral therapy. It's a very specified therapy, and most therapists aren't trained in it. So you do want to make sure that you're vetting out not just a CBT therapist, but a CBT ERP therapist.
ERP.
So, because ERP is not typically taught in graduate school. And so this is a therapist that would have to go out and seek out their own training or their own knowledge and get their own practice. And ERP is systematically exposing the child, or I keep saying child, but I mean teenager, whatever age.
We're all children at all ages.
Right? I feel that way. So we're systematically exposing them to the trigger. I kind of call it, you know, offense. So defense is, how am I going to interact with OCD when OCD is knocking?
Yeah.
And so learning how to delay doing a compulsion, how to eventually ignore a compulsion. But then offense is ERP, where it's like, now OCD is not bothering me in this moment, but I'm going to trigger OCD on purpose and, you know, mentally go to the OCD gym and learn how to build up my muscles to tolerate the discomfort. Because ultimately, it's tolerating discomfort. Mm-hmm. It's not getting rid of the intrusive thought or feeling, although that will diminish over time because you're not growing those neural pathways. But it's, how do I learn how to handle discomfort?
Yeah.
And you do that by practicing, by doing exercises.
Yeah. And I think too, it seems like when you're thinking about it and worried about it, the more you worry about it taking over your life, the more you're thinking about it, the more it happens because it's constantly on your mind. So you're doing that.
Yeah.
So is there anything else parents really need to know to understand and help their kids through that are basically showcasing signs of OCD?
Yeah, I would definitely get an assessment if you have even an inkling. If a parent has an inkling their child has OCD, they most likely have pretty extreme OCD because OCD will ride, you know, below the surface. And it's very easy to hide initially. And when you start to notice it as a parent, it's probably been there a really long time. And so often as parents, we only see the tip of the iceberg. So I say, get an assessment. You know, luckily with PsychPak, since COVID, you can actually cross state lines, you know, because there's licensing reciprocity. And so that's been great, even for my own kids, because I've been like, okay, I can find someone, you know, outside of my community who specializes in the particular issues they're going through.
Yeah.
So get an assessment, even if it's virtual, to be able to figure out where to go from there. That'd be the number one step.
That's great. What is one golden nugget that you want parents to walk away with from this episode? If there's one thing.
I would definitely say that OCD therapy has to be with an OCD trained therapist.
Yeah.
I have seen so many parents in my community who will say, well, I'm just going to go, you know, there's a therapist down the road and it's better than nothing. Yeah. OCD, I think, is the only disorder where it's better to not have therapy at all.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
If you don't have a trained OCD therapist, then just going to the local therapist. And so really vetting out their experience, making sure they're saying ERP, because when you approach OCD like you do anxiety, and you're doing cognitive restructuring and you're problem solving, all of that will actually grow OCD. And so you can have a full session, you're paying for basically a compulsion session without the therapist really knowing and the child not knowing, and they're getting worse and worse and you don't know why.
Yeah, that is very good information. So how do people find you, Natasha?
They can find me at my home, which is at atparentingsurvival.com. From there, you can see like my YouTube, podcast, courses, membership, all that kind of fun stuff.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And that's a wrap. Thank you, parents, for taking time out of your busy day to listen in. I appreciate you. If you found the episode enlightening, please like, review, and share with a friend navigating the teen years. Until next time, stay curious. Remember, there's always more to the story than what you see.